Hello, everyone. I'm Dulé Hill as Billy Flynn in Chicago.
And I'm Rachel McAdams as Roxy Hart.
And this podcast won't run a week, your bi-weekly musical theater podcast where we talk about musicals and we perfectly cast Chicago.
Wow. Broadway. That was so fun.
That was great. I loved that.
I know. Look at us go.
Oh, look at
That's
us.
That's the celebrity casting we need.
It's what we've been asking for as a society.
Screaming for, honestly.
Begging, pleading.
Tearing pissing, down walls.
Throwing up. Shitting. How the hell are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Getting married in a month and 9 days, which is crazy. Absolutely mind-boggling to think about. But you know what? We're here. We're doing it.
I'm so excited.
And that's a month and 9 days as of recording. I don't know what it'll be whenever this episode comes out.
Can you please do math and not lie to our audience?
No. I will lie before I ever do math.
Yeah, okay. Math. Smart. Smart.
Yeah, so obviously wedding planning is a lot, doing that, and yeah.
Listen, boo. That's amazing.
That's about it. And working my little butt off.
Working and twerking. Listen,
and
we have to.
Reading and bleeding, you know?
Rough.
How are you? How's life been?
I, like, am also working, twerking, and bleeding. You know?
Yeah.
Regularly, which is good.
Healthy.
Healthy.
The leeches are working.
Yeah. The leeches are finally working. It's been a rough 6 years, but finally they're working.
Worth it.
Yeah, I'm really, like, the thing I've been saying is that I've just been kind of boring recently, which is not a bad thing.
Ugh, I love being boring.
I don't love being boring, but I know I need to be boring.
Yeah.
Because I need to be able to focus my brain on things that aren't just this industry. Like, buying my groceries and being a person and... Mm-hmm. Making money and making my ends meet, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, I feel like I'm finally getting a little bit back on track now that I've kind of grieved Seymour and have accepted a new normal. Not to bring us down on the pod, but, you know, it's like a... Yeah. I think that's kind of what's been going on for me recently is just... accepting a new normal.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you had Seymour for so long. Like, there was bound to be some growing pains.
Did we ever make
in that transition? Well, we made an Instagram post.
Oh, we did.
Seymour.
That's true.
Is no longer with us. He's
sweet boy.
On that fluffy little dog bed in the sky.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Or in hell. I don't know. Really depended on the day.
Really?
That one.
It really did. No, hell, I don't think hell would.
No.
Hell would be, they would try to torture him in hell and he would be like, what? Like, why are you looking at me like that?
Just giving the devil, like, the craziest side eye you've ever seen.
He gives the best side eye.
Oh, my God.
So funny. But no, he's, yeah, so that's kind of. Well, it's spring, yeah. Spring being on the horizon slash being here.
Thank God.
Yeah, that's really helpful.
Every year it surprises me, but every year I'm like, is that the will to live?
Honestly.
Oh my God, the sun comes out and I'm actually like, you know what? I'm going to make it through this.
Wow, I forgot that I can look toward the sky and feel hopeful about things.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Let's make plans.
Well, it's always so funny, like, once the sun starts shining, I'm like, wow, wait, why am I all of a sudden feeling so good?
Yeah.
I always forget that it's because I have a lack of vitamin D.
Yeah. Like, I even have one of those, like, seasonal affective disorder lamps.
Mm.
And I'm still, like, barely hanging on through the winter. God. So. Yeah,
no. I need, like, the life that comes with the sunshine, too.
Yeah.
You know, I'm affected by that. Going
out, and yeah. It's, Sam and I have started once a week, because we have a terrible habit of, like, we'll get up and we'll have coffee and we just, like, sit and scroll on our phones while we drink our coffee, which is not a good habit. But once a week, when we're both off, we get up and we take our coffee and to-go cups and we go walk in the park.
That's so cute.
Which is very cute, but also, like, it forces us to go out into the sun. Yes,
that's very good.
Like, first thing in the morning. So, that's been really great. And, you know, we're super healthy over here. You know. Healthy mind, healthy body, healthy heart.
Fat ass.
Fat ass. Healthy tits. Okay, let's talk about the show. We've talked about my body enough.
That's never enough. It's never enough.
It's never enough.
Never enough. I'm
so excited about this episode. I'm so excited to talk about this show. If this show had come out when we were in high school, I would have been so annoying.
Yeah, I hear that. I hear that.
I know it.
Yeah.
Because I was pretty annoying about it as an adult.
Yeah. You love this show.
I really do.
Yeah.
And listeners, I know you're like, what is it? We can't read the title of the podcast episode. What are you talking about? I'll tell you. We're doing Be More Chill.
Little Women the Musical. Oh. Whoops.
Whoops. Well, similar in that it is based on a book as well.
Oh.
And has teens.
I didn't know it was based on a book.
It is. It is. That is a perfect segue. It's based on a novel written by Ned Vizzini from 2004 was when it was published. Music and lyrics by Mr. Joe Iconis. Book by Joe Trax. It premiered in May of 2015 at the Two River Theater in Red Bank, New Jersey. It ran for 6 weeks. Had a pretty healthy little run. They did a cast recording and then, like, nothing came of it. It, you know, as some shows do, like, you do the run, you make the cast recording, and
then you move
on. And then you don't hear anything. You move on. People take other jobs.
Yeah.
And then 2 years later, the show went viral on, like, Tumblr and on, you know, all the, like, teenage Broadway fan forums and shit. Like, it was being streamed a wild amount on Spotify. Like, Spotify wrote an article about how the show had, like, found new life.
What?
Yeah, like, there's an article on Spotify.com. Whoa. About how the show had, like, found new life. And it's so interesting, and I've always been, like, a true believer in, like, the power that fans can have in the art that is created. And this just is a perfect example of, if you and enough people push together, you can get shit done. You can get the show on the stage.
Yeah.
And they did. And the show was picked up for another production in 2018. When it started to go viral, the album actually entered Billboard's cast album, like, charts, like, the top 10.
Oh my God.
It was
God.
In the top 10 on Billboard, which is crazy. The show opened off Broadway at the Pershing Square Signature Center in August of 2018, and the run fully sold out. It got a 1 week extension, and then it closed September 30th of 2018. So it ran, closed. But, like, in the middle of the run, on September 5th, they announced that they're going to go to Broadway. Transferred to Broadway early 2019 at the Lyceum Theater. It officially opened March 10th, 2019. And then the Broadway production closed on August 11th, 2019, after playing 30 previews and 177 performances. Despite the show's strong fan following online, it received mixed reviews from critics. Terry Teachout of the Wall Street Journal wrote about the Broadway production, "Be More Chill is one of the strongest musicals of the past decade, a charming, astutely crafted tale of neurotic post-millennial geeks in love whose appeal is in no way limited to those whom it portrays," which is kind of nice. And then Ben Brantley said of the off-Broadway production that it was the theatrical equivalent of one of those high-pitched dog whistles that only those under 25 can hear.
That, I hate that man, but that's funny.
Like, I hate it. That's fucking funny. That's fucking funny.
That's fucking funny.
That's fucking funny. Let's get into the, like, cast. Like, the people that we would know from the cast. So in the original Two Rivers Theater production in New Jersey, the main character, Jeremy, was played by Will Connolly. Michael, who's his best friend, was played by George Salazar.
Icon.
He is, like, the star of this show. Yeah. And if you've ever listened to any of the music, you know why. And he transferred with it from New Jersey to off-Broadway and then Broadway. And then also, a little Oscar nominee, Stephanie Sue, was in the New Jersey production and then transferred with it to the off-Broadway and Broadway production. And then, like, Jason Tam was in the Broadway production. You would know him from the A Chorus Line revival and Lysistrata Jones and, like, all kinds of people. It's a really, like, when you look at it, there's a lot of people who are, I would say, were up-and-comers at the time, and the show really, like, pushed them to a new level. George Salazar won the Lucille Lortel Award for Outstanding Featured Actor in a Musical for his portrayal of Michael, and the Broadway production was nominated for 1 Tony Award, 8 Drama Desks, and 4 Outer Critics Circle Awards. It did not win any awards. The Broadway production won none. The off-Broadway production won the one for George Salazar. And lastly, before I get into the plot, our wonderful, incredible, so talented audio engineer worked on the off-Broadway production. So,
hey,
Jackson, this one is for you.
Yes, it is. Work,
yes,
Jackie.
Yes, it is. Work. Great. So, let's get into it. Now, before I get into the plot, there are some differences in the show. The show changed from the New Jersey production to the Broadway production. I'm going to read the plot for the Broadway production because that's the only one available. But I will say, I have a preference, and it is a very popular preference. Pretty much everyone agrees that the original Two Rivers Theater production is better. Not necessarily because of the people in the show. For me, that's not a real reason.
Sure.
I prefer the characterization of certain characters. I think the music was better in the original production. It just was better for me.
Yeah.
So, I am going to be reading the Broadway production. Sorry. If I could find the Two Rivers, that's the one I would be reading. But here we are. Okay, Act 1. Jeremy here, who is a high school junior and, like, a loser, he lives with his dad, who works from home, and he refuses to wear pants. That's a whole bit. The dad doesn't wear pants. Like, the whole show, the dad
Same.
Is always not wearing pants. I was like, Slee? No? Just the dad. Okay. At school, Jeremy is bullied by a popular kid named Rich, who writes Boyf, B-O-Y-F, on his backpack. And his best friend, Michael, shows up. And on Michael's backpack, Rich has wrote Rends, R-I-E-N-D-S. So when you put them together, it says boyfriends.
Oof. God. Oof. And you know, the most unflattering, most embarrassing thing in the world is to be gay.
That is the most. But what is actually funny, in both the original Two Rivers production and Broadway production,
mm-hmm.
In the opening number, which is More Than Survive, which all of this happens in that opening number, the like popular guy calls Jeremy gay. He's like, gay. And then everyone goes, ah, ha, 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 ha. And one girl goes, I love gay people. She says it in both. It's the same girl. I am assuming she ad-libbed it.
And they like, just loved it.
We're keeping that.
We're keeping it.
That's funny.
That's
it's
gold.
It's 2015. We're at Two Rivers Theater in New Jersey. We're not homophobic. We're keeping that.
Well, and it's also like in high school, if someone tried to out you and say that you were gay, like, oh my God. Horrible.
Oh, horrible.
It would be devastating.
Yeah, especially, you know, if it's taking place in 2004 when the book was published.
Yeah.
Even worse. Michael tries to comfort Jeremy by telling him that being a loser is okay. Jeremy's longtime crush, Christine Canigula, signs up for the school play, which prompts him to do so as well. And Jeremy, this whole opening number, he is like just trying to make it through the day. He is your classic loser, nerdy, geeky high school boy who does not know how to function. He's not good at like talking to people. He's very awkward. And that's the opening number, More Than Survive, which is a great opening number. I think it sets the scene really well. It sets the tone. The whole score has this really fun, like kind of 8-bit video game kind of sound to it, which is super fun. As they wait for the first play rehearsal to begin, Christine professes her love of theater to Jeremy because she gets to play different people and always knows what to say and perform in the song I Love Play Rehearsal.
This song is so cute.
It's so cute, and it makes me a little emotional to listen to it because I remember being that way.
Yeah.
Like being like, oh, I know what to do because there's a script. You follow a script so you know what comes next. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
I love it. I think it's so cute. And Stephanie Soo really is very, very good in this show.
Yeah, she is very good.
I really like her as Christine. The drama teacher, Mr. Reyes, reveals that the play is going to be A Midsummer Night's Dream, set in the post-apocalyptic future, retitled A Midsummer Nightmare About Zombies. During rehearsal, Jake, one of the popular boys, flirts with Christine, making Jeremy jealous. Jeremy is tormented in the bathroom by Rich, who tells Jeremy how he managed to become popular. As an unpopular freshman, he took a pill called a Super Quantum Unit Intel Processor, or a SQIP, containing a computer that implants itself in the user's brain and then tells the user what to do and say. This is called the Squip song. It's very funny. There's this whole thing where he's like, Jeremy's like, oh, is it like drugs? And Rich goes, it's better than drugs, Jeremy. It's from Japan!
Yeah, that is so funny.
It's great. Like, also,
that actor sounds so much like Andrew Reynolds.
He really does. Like, in a different timeline, Andrew Reynolds played that part for
sure. Yeah. Which maybe I should have saved that.
It's all right.
But that, I just was like, oh my God, is this Andrew Reynolds? Like,
yeah,
it sounds so much like him. Oh. Yeah.
So, Rich suggests that Jeremy buy one so he can be cooler. While playing video games with Michael, Jeremy tells him about Rich's offer and considers if Rich is just trying to scam him. After an awkward conversation with his dad, who is still not wearing pants, Jeremy decides to check the SQIP out. Jeremy assures Michael that no matter what happens, they'll always be a team in the song Two Player Game, which really is like the thesis for this whole show, especially with this like whole video game 8-bit soundtrack going on underneath everything. Of like, you just gotta like make it through with the people who love you most.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, very sweet.
Yeah, it's very sweet.
Yeah. The two go to the mall to buy a squib from a dealer at Payless Shoe Source. Jeremy.
Oh, rip Payless.
I know. R.I.P. Payless. Mm. Jeremy, as instructed, swallows it with green Mountain Dew. So the important thing is, in order to activate it, you have to drink green Mountain Dew. To deactivate it, you would drink Code Red. But we don't want to deactivate it, so make sure it's green. Sorry, I think it's so dumb, but I love it.
So, it is so the world of this show, too, like that kind of humor.
Yeah, and like, oh, it's great. So the squib activates. They're in the mall. And when the squib activates, it causes Jeremy to have a seizure in front of Christine and Jake. And that's when we get to meet the squib for the first time. And this, honestly, this is my big personal complaint with the difference between the two productions.
Say it loud. Say it loud. Articulate. Let
loud
us all know.
Loud and proud. So in the Broadway production, the squib is this kind of like Southern California, super cool, laid back guy. He's described as being similar to Keanu Reeves, which I'm not opposed to. I just would prefer a more like John Wick, The Matrix kind of Keanu. This is a very like laid back. And I could see why they would go that way. But in the original New Jersey production, the squib is this like toxic, like corporate computer, like bitch in a like guy in a suit,
right?
You know, like he is. I just think it works more for what the squib is, and I think the personification of the computer as this like straight laced in a suit, like I run the numbers, I crunch the algorithms, and I tell you what to do so you can be successful. I think it just makes more sense for that to be someone who's a little more by the book.
I agree.
And when I see the like, Jeremy, you gotta be more chill, it just doesn't do that for me.
Yeah. It's also like so funny for someone who is not chill at all to be like, you need to be more chill.
Yeah.
It's like you're selling an experience rather than actually living the experience.
Exactly.
That makes you evil, manipulative and evil.
Exactly. He's manipulative, and like, I mean, you could really compare this to Little Shop very, very easily. They're very similar in terms of like, you know, manipulation and like the nerdy main character who wants to be better and overcome where he is and blah, blah, blah. So the squib logs on, says hey, and immediately starts to criticize Jeremy's appearance, personality, and behavior.
Work.
Basically being like, you are terrible. Go get a new shirt. So Jeremy walks to a store, he picks up a shirt without really looking, realizes it's a woman's shirt, and as he does, the two most popular girls in school, Brooke and Chloe, walk up and they're like, are you holding a girl's shirt? What a fucking loser. And the squib helps Jeremy fabricate this story about like, oh, I did pick this up, but that's because it reminded me of my ex-girlfriend who cheated on me. I'm so sad about it. And in this lie, he creates this like connection with these two girls. Which is like, okay, work, King.
Yeah, sure, okay. We love that lying gets you closer. Okay, work.
All right, work. They offer him a ride home. And with the ride, they're like, we're going to go to Pinkberry, too.
Yeah. I love that song.
I do, too. Do you want to ride? Like,
in my mom's car.
Like, Pinkberry. Truly, I was like, if this came out when we were in high school, that would have been us.
Yeah. Fully.
We would have both wanted to be Christine, but we would have been these girls.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So they offer Jeremy a ride. The Squib says, you have to take the ride. But Jeremy's like, no, I don't want to leave Michael behind. The girls leave, and then the Squib lies to Jeremy and says, well, Michael actually left. So now you're shit out of luck. You don't have a ride home because you didn't listen to me. And the Squib tells him that in order for the plan for the improvement to work, Jeremy has to obey every single order that he is given. And the Squib keeps saying these things of like, everything about you is so terrible. And Jeremy repeats it every time. He's like, everything about me is so terrible. Everything about you makes me want to die. Everything about me makes me want to die. Like, it's this constant, which is, I mean,
yeah.
If you've ever been depressed or anxious,
you know what that feels like.
The next day, Jeremy heads to school with renewed confidence, wondering if he might be less invisible than before. The Squib delves into the inner psyche of the student body around him, giving Jeremy insight on the fears and insecurities of his peers. Jeremy's Squib syncs up with Rich's, instantly making them friends. And Jeremy heads confidently into play rehearsal. Christine tells Jeremy about feelings for a guy she knows. And initially, Jeremy thinks it's him, but it turns out to be Jake. And it's this whole song of, like, a guy that I'd kind of be into. And it's leading up. And even the Squib is like, yeah, of course it's you. I've been, like,
there's
releasing
no
your pheromones
way.
Yeah. All day.
That's so good.
It's so funny. But then it turns out to be Jake. Of course, the popular guy.
Of course. Orange Crivello.
Orange Crivello, DDS. Afterward, the Squib informs Jeremy that Christine won't date him until his social standing drastically improves, encouraging Jeremy to use an interested Brooke as a stepping stone to greater popularity. He hooks up with her, while Jake asks Christine to come to his house in the song Upgrade. Overwhelmed, Jeremy asks the Squib to shut itself off for a few minutes. Immediately, Jeremy sees Michael and is elated, but Michael states that Jeremy has been ignoring him all day. And then the Squib explains that he has been using the optic nerve blocking to block Michael from Jeremy's vision, and that in order to be more popular, he has to upgrade at the cost of everything that links him to Jeremy 1.0. After weighing his options, Jeremy decides that he's tired of being a loser and turns on the optic nerve blocking, leaving him alone with the Squib. Boom. End of Act 1 of the Broadway production.
Fantastic.
Typical guy. Typical fucking dude. Typical. Fucking being like, I gotta get a girl. That's more important than anything else.
Yeah.
My closest friend.
Left him in the bathroom.
Yeah, left him in that bathroom. And the finale in the Broadway production is a song called Loser, Geek, Whatever, is the Act 1 finale. I don't love it. It's just not for me. I think the original one was better. They just end with Upgrade, and it's this, like, Michael being like, oh my god, like, Jeremy, like, are we gonna, like, hang out? And Jeremy goes, optic nerve blocking on. We've got work to do. It's great. It's fun.
I love that show.
Is just so camp. And like, yeah. It's great.
We need to get to Act 2. Never mind.
Yeah. Act 2. On Halloween, Jake hosts a large unsupervised party with alcohol. Christine arrives in her Juliet princess costume because of Jake's past compliment on it. He calls her Juliet throughout the show.
That's problematic.
That's also embarrassing. Like, imagine if we were in high school and some person kept calling you like Dorothy.
I know. It's like, okay.
Okay. All right. Jake brushes her aside at the party. Jeremy arrives to meet Brooke, but Chloe, who's jealous of Brooke, tries to seduce Jeremy. Jeremy is uncomfortable and tries to get away, but the squib forces him to remain in the situation as it escalates to Chloe making out with Jeremy. Problematic.
Very.
Consent. Consent is important. Yes. But also, like, of course the computer, like, of course the computer is like, no, we're going to do this. Yep. This is literally my whole job.
Yep.
Chloe also has Jeremy drink alcohol, which causes the squib to malfunction. And then feigns.
Damn. Antidepressants. I know. Truly. Is like, that's all a squib is.
The squib is just little drug.
Yep, little drugs.
Little bupropion, little Lexapro. And feigns having sex with him after being caught, angering Jake and breaking Brooke's heart. Fleeing from Jake and the girls, Jeremy runs into the bathroom where he finds Michael, who has crashed the party. Michael tries... I know. I love Michael. He's such a sweetie.
I know.
He tries to warn Jeremy of the dangers of the squip, having researched it and discovered that someone ended up in a mental hospital after they went crazy trying to get it out of their head. Jeremy accuses Michael of being jealous of his popularity and calls him a loser, storming out of the bathroom. Michael, devastated and angry, locks himself in and has a panic attack and sensory overload as he mourns the loss of his best and only friend in the hit most popular song from this show, Michael in the Bathroom.
Which, to me, is a better version of Waving Through a Window.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah.
If you were like, I really want to audition for Dear Evan Hansen, like, I really think I'm an Evan, then you should also be, then this is what you should bring in.
Absolutely.
Don't, like, put Waving Through a Window, sing this.
No. Absolutely not. And George Salazar is just such an incredible actor. Like, the work he does in everything is great, but, like, especially this. He's just so grounded in this, like, world that is not grounded at all.
Right.
But he plays it in this way that is very, like, touching. And, like, you really feel for him, but it's still, like, a fun song to listen to.
Oh. When she goes, so when he says, I hear a drunk girl sing
with Whitney through the door. I want to dance with somebody.
Oh, so good.
I love this. I know that the song isn't really cool anymore. I don't care.
Who says it's not cool anymore?
I don't know. I feel like teenagers don't think it's cool.
Oh, fuck teenagers. Fuck teenagers. I don't care. I don't care what
this song.
I don't care what any teenager thinks of me. Like, if you don't think I'm cool, I'm like, ow.
That's what teenagers want.
Ow. Oh.
Oh, can you drive? Can you rent a car?
Do you need me to buy you beer? Fuck off.
Oh, I love the song. Jeremy talks to Christine without the squib's help, and he asks her out in a burst of confidence. Christine, who has found herself in an existential crisis after breaking up with Jake, declines. So it doesn't go well for him. And then that, you know, leads him to be like, well, I have to use the squib. That's the only way to get what I want. Meanwhile, an erratic Rich goes around the party frantically asking people for Mountain Dew Red. Code Red.
Code Red.
Code Red for those in the know. Jeremy's squip finally reactivates and reviews the events of the night, foreseeing a disturbing outcome. The squip prompts Jeremy to leave the party immediately. Rich, alone and desperate, threatens his squip and picks up a lit jack-o'-lantern. The next morning, Jenna Rowland... love this bitch. The school gossip informs everyone that Rich burned down Jake's house at the end of the party, sending Rich to the hospital and causing Jake to break both of his legs jumping out the window trying to escape.
Fuck.
And this is the song, The Smartphone Hour, which is another so funny. Great. Oh my god, this song is so good. The hook is, Rich set a fire and he burned down the house. Whoa. It's great. It's super fun. And it does very much have that, hi, Nancy. Hi, Helen. Like, kind of.
It's such a funny joke, too.
It's so fucking fucking funny. And, like, during this song, Chloe and Brooke kind of, like, mend their friendship a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Very fun. At home, Jeremy is confronted by his father, who's still not wearing pants, who is worried about Jeremy's new personality and change in attitude. Which is like, okay, Dad, we'll put on pants, and maybe I'll have a better attitude.
Yeah, then we'll have a conversation. Yeah.
Jeremy reprimands his father for his behavior since the divorce, calling his father a loser as well. Shaken by Jeremy's words, Mr. Here realizes that something is very wrong and he must take charge. He tracks down Michael and asks him not to give up on his friend. Michael reluctantly agrees to help on the condition that Mr. Here puts on some pants and becomes a better father. In the pants song. I know you were thinking, why does she keep bringing it up? Because there's a song about him putting on pants.
There's a song about the pants.
And being a better father. Jeremy encounters Christine, who is shaken and upset by the fire, and he realizes the Squip knew the fire would happen and he could have stayed at the party and helped. Jeremy is unhappy with the relationships that he's damaged and angrily blames the Squip for his misfortunes. The Squip instead blames it on human error and tells Jeremy he can improve the lives of his fellow students by providing them all with Squips. In Rich's locker, Jeremy finds a box full of them.
Don't feed the plants.
Which Jeremy pours into a beaker of Mountain Dew in the song The Pitiful Children. And it's so fucking sick, dude. It's so,
I've I've not heard that song. I need to listen to it now.
You, when you get there, you're going to be like, this is sick. I love it. It's so good. It's so good. As the play begins, because rehearsals are done.
Mm-hmm.
Romeo and Midsummer Nightmare with zombies is like ready to go. As the play begins, Jeremy tries to convince Christine of the Squip's benefits. She's disgusted by the idea of it, causing Jeremy to doubt the plan. Of course, she's an actress. She's like, I need my brain. That's my instrument. anticipating this, the Squip has already begun the takeover of the cast. The Squip reveals its intention to sink the entire student body and then the whole world. Remembering Rich's episode at the party, Jeremy comes to a realization. Mountain Dew activates the Squip, while Mountain Dew Red deactivates it.
such a specific and funny thing. That is what? That's the kryptonite? Is Mountain Dew code red?
Okay. I mean, it makes sense. It's red. Red means stop.
Yeah, but like, green means go.
Green means go. mellow yellow kind of just makes it slow down a little bit. Ow. Are you okay?
Yes. I just rammed my head into the wall. That's so funny. That's so stupid.
Like, I know.
I heard it, and then I, like, heard it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Oh, incredible. The Squip retorts that Mountain Dew Red was discontinued decades ago for this reason, but Michael reappears from the audience with a bottle of his own. He's got it, because he's a nerd. Of course he has a discontinued soda.
Yes. And it has, and it's code red, of course.
And of course it's code red. If I know anything about nerds, they love Mountain Dew code red.
Yeah.
he gives the bottle to Jeremy after making him apologize for his actions. Work. Good.
Work, 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 work.
But a Squipped Jake dumps most of it out. Jeremy and Michael fight off the controlled students until the Squip reveals that Christine has been Squipped. Under its influence, under its influence, she professes her love for Jeremy. Jeremy, however, knows this is not what he had wanted and makes Christine drink the last of the red Mountain Dew.
Aww.
True love. Which causes a chain reaction that destroys the rest of the Squips. Okay. Jeremy wakes up in the hospital, sharing a room with Rich, who proudly comes out to Jeremy as bisexual and is finally ready to be who he really is. King.
All right, King.
He started out being homophobic. Nope, he was just secretly bisexual.
Always.
Work. It always is that way.
Yeah, always.
100% of the time.
100% of the time.
Michael visits Jeremy and the two reconcile, and Jeremy's dad, finally wearing pants, visits Jeremy as well, informing him that he'll be a better dad. Surrounded by his friends and family, Jeremy accepts that there will always be outside influences, but he needs to learn to make up his own mind instead. He asks Christine out again, and she says yes, kissing him. The squip reveals itself to still be alive, weakly taunting Jeremy from inside his head, but Jeremy ignores it, happily proclaiming that, of all the voices in my head, the loudest one is mine. The end.
Oh, so good.
Didn't you kind of eat that up a little bit?
Yeah, I did. Nom nom nom.
Like, it is a very silly show. I think if you go in expecting it to be, like, cabaret.
Right.
In terms of being serious, you're going to be very sadly disappointed.
Right.
But, I mean, I think you can tell by, like, album artwork, like, yeah, the poster or the playbill or whatever, that this is going to be a silly show.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a little wacky, a little campy, but we're still going to have fun.
Yeah, right.
Like, so I really do love this show. And
well, I've never listened to it before. This is the first time I've visited it, except I know Michael in the bathroom, and I know.
Of course.
And I've heard the play rehearsal.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a fun little show. And I think it's really perfect for most, like, high school and college theater groups.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to do this show. Yeah. I think it's just so fun.
Yeah.
And I like a fun show. I feel like it's already gotten, like, it's kind of, like, second life, which has been really wonderful to see, you know, like, even if it didn't turn out the way people wanted it to.
Sure.
I think it still really says something that it got to, like, basically come back from the dead.
Yeah, that's so cool.
After a bunch of teenagers were like, no, this music is fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the power of fans, like you said.
Truly. And, you know, I think if this had come out when we were in high school and we had been listening to it and then we found out it got to come to Broadway, like, that would have been such an incredible feeling.
Yeah, it would have. Like,
we helped it get there.
And we would have been in the theater.
Absolutely.
We would have been there. Absolutely.
And, you know, I think it's great. I really hope that, you know what? I think it's going to do great in Chicago. I was thinking about this. I was like, there was supposed to be a production in 2020 that got canceled for obvious reasons. but I think that this is the kind of show that would do really well in, like, a scrappy Chicago, like, black box theater kind of vibe, I think. Mm-hmm. I feel like a Broadway stage, similarly with Little Shop, is just too big.
Too big.
It needs more to be more intimate.
Mm-hmm. And scrappy, like you said.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be polished.
Exactly. I prefer it to not be polished.
Agreed.
And, you know, that goes, I would like some of the technical elements to be a little more polished, but even, like, the technical elements could be scrappy.
Right.
For me. It's just so fun.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun listening to it, and I mean, it's one of those shows that, if we were in high school when it came out, it would have been our personalities. We would have seen it on Broadway. We would have had all the merch. We would have seen every cast member bootlegged it.
Oh, yeah. We would have been menaces.
Yeah.
And we would have been begging our community theater to do it, or Miss Ray to do it.
Yeah, and I would have been like, I could play Michael. I mean, I could play George Salazar's character. Yeah, Michael. Yeah, I get Dear Evan Hansen. I'm always like, I could play Dear Evan. I mean, Wait.
Hanson?
Yeah.
Mbop. No. It is interesting, though, in the Broadway production, the main character, Jeremy, was played by a guy who was in Dear Evan Hansen. He plays Evan's, like, friend who helps him write the letter.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, look at that.
Which, again, there's a lot of connections here. Like,
makes sense. I mean, high school in this time period. High
school boys, yeah. The time period's the same.
Contemporary musical theater.
So contemporary. And, I mean, Joe Iconis.
Yeah.
I love Joe Iconis. I think he's such an interesting composer and writer for musical theater. I think he is really open to taking big risks. And this, I think, could have been a really big risk. And it paid off. Clearly. But I really think that's all I had to say. So I'm ready to do a little dream casting if you are. Did you have anything else you wanted to talk about it?
No, I mean, I just am happy that I got to finally visit this show. I didn't get to experience it when it was off Broadway or on Broadway, even though I was in the city when both of those things were happening. For some reason, it just isn't one that I came across for myself. I don't know. But even though you loved it, I don't know why that was.
It kind of makes sense for me, especially at that time in your life. I feel like you were really focused on, like, other things. And, like, other musicals were more of the things you were drawn to. Like,
oh,
this is just, I don't know that you would have seen yourself in this show. Mm. And I think that that's the kind of shows that you were focused on.
Sure. That's fair. That's a good assessment. You're like, I think you were, I think you're just too self-centered to appreciate this because there's not a role that you would want to play.
You said it, not me.
Well, you basically said it.
Okay. Let's dreamcast. So I only did, like, the big four. Okay. I did Jeremy, Michael, Christine, and the Squip. Because okay. I do truly believe, and I think they did a good job with the Broadway production. Most of the actors, I would love for this to be like a Broadway debut or like a New York City debut if we're doing this off Broadway, you know?
Yeah, agreed.
I just think it really lends itself to that kind of like rough and tumble, scrappy, young, green, hungry kind of vibe.
I completely agree with you.
So for Jeremy, for our lead, I truly did not have to think very hard about any of these. These just came to me. So for Jeremy, Andrew Barth Feldman.
Who is that?
Jimmy Award winner. You would know him from his performance of I Love Betsy at the Jimmy Awards.
Oh, yeah.
He ended up going on to play Evan in Dear Evan Hansen.
Oh, okay. Well.
And he's also in No Hard Feelings with Jennifer Lawrence.
Oh.
Which is a very fun movie if you've not seen it. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, wow.
Good casting. Yeah, I think he's super funny. And I think one of the things I really liked about the original Jeremy is he was funny without it ever feeling like he was trying too hard to be funny.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Andrew Barth Feldman has a similar sense of humor.
Yeah. That's I love that. That's very specific, and that's why a show like this is so special to so many people, is because the characters require special people to be in the show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, mine's kind of boring. It's Ethan Slater or Wesley Taylor.
Oh, Wesley Taylor would have eaten this up.
Yeah, he would have been in the show so fast if he was younger when it came out.
If it had been like the right time, he would have eaten it up. I would have loved like a Wesley Taylor. I would have loved him for almost any role in this show. I think this is the kind of thing I really love to see him do.
Yeah, I agree. Completely agree.
So next is Michael. He's locked in the bathroom. We got to get him out. Who are we going to cast? We got to
get him out.
Who's in that bathroom? Do you want to go first?
No, because this is the hardest one to cast.
Oh, okay. Well, it was very easy for me. Not because, like, George Salazar is the obvious answer because he is incredible at the role, but I really do think that if the show had come out 5 years earlier, it would have been Adam Chandler Barat.
Oh, yeah.
Easy.
Yeah. I would be super interested in seeing this character played so differently from how Michael Salazar played it.
Sure.
So someone like a Josh Gad, who everything kind of like brushes off his shoulders because you're like, oh, he's so funny and nice. Nothing ever actually hurts him. But then when he's finally in the bathroom with the door closed is when he has that
break
and you see that version of him. I think that would be really interesting.
I love that. I would really love to see something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always the ones laughing the loudest.
Woof.
You gotta talk to the most. Check in.
Yeah. Check in.
For Christine, my first thought was Andrea McAsate, I think is how you say her last name. Ooh. But truly, any actress who has played Anne Boleyn in Six.
Yeah, agreed with that completely.
Andrea.
That is.
Yeah, Andrea originated on Broadway, but this is such, like, Anne Boleyn from Six energy.
Yes. Like, if Stephanie Hsu, is that how you say her last name?
Sue.
If Stephanie Hsu, like, did not go off and do film and television right away, she would have gone directly into Six.
Absolutely. And I would have eaten
it. It would have been amazing.
Yeah. So good.
I would love like a Bella Coppola, but like young and like a little bit more like sprightly.
Yeah, I'm into that. I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
Bella Coppola is great.
Yeah. But I'd want her to be more youthful than she is right now. Like she has a little bit more like groundedness to her.
Yeah.
But I want to see her in high school.
Yeah. A little more up here, a little less weighted down.
But you know that that's there. Like, that's important for that character, which is why Stephanie Hsu is so good in this role.
Yeah. Definitely.
So, there's mine.
Love. Love, love, love. Okay, and lastly, the last person I cast is the Squip. Now, the Squip is my favorite character in this show. I think the Squip is the most interesting character. I think you can do the most with them. Obviously, they're not a real person, so they're not really, they don't have to abide by the rules of society because they're a fucking computer.
So true.
And I cast you. I want you to be my Squip.
Me?
Yeah, you. And it wasn't even something I had to think about. I was like, no, it's obviously Slee. Put her in bad bitch business suit with, like, some shoulder pads and, like, tiny little sunglasses and just be like, you're terrible. You look ugly. I hate you.
I would have so much fun.
I know.
With a role like that. I mean, the first song that the Squib sings is so good.
It's so fucking good. And so bored.
So bored.
So bored in a way that I live for.
It's a Karen Walker boredom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, honey.
Over it.
Yeah. So I cast you. I think you would be a great Squib.
Thank you so much. That means so much to me. It really does. I cast Gavin Creel.
Yes. But we talk about this in other podcasts, but it's, like, similar circles.
Yeah, similar circles.
Like, in a different universe, you are playing his role from She Loves Me.
Exactly.
Or the
Wolf. Not even in a different universe. This universe.
In this universe, when someone's brave enough to cast a woman.
Let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's
We never do.
Let's talk about that. You and I never talk about gender blind casting.
We need to finally talk about it.
We need to sit down and openly discuss.
Audience, we've heard you. We've heard your roar.
We're here. We're listening. Cast so, yeah, women Gavin in men's Creel. Roles. Yeah, Gavin Creel is great. I love that.
Yeah, but it's that joyful. That. It's the joyful villain. Like, you can understand, like, the snake oil salesman.
Exactly. Oh, and Gavin Creel is so good at that.
Yes. Well, and this is going to be embarrassing because what I was about to say was that I'm so good at that. But the fact that you...
Well, I already said it because I cast exactly. you, bitch.
Exactly. But it was just funny that you were like, God, and Gavin Creel is so good at that, as I was going, and I'm so good at that.
No,
listen, we were humble in the beginning.
Look, we started off humble, but sometimes you gotta own it. You gotta be proud.
You got to. Ooh.
And that's it.
That's that.
That's that. That's Be More Chill.
Such a fun show.
It's such a fun show. And I'm really glad that now you know about it.
Me too.
So now you can, like, understand.
Yeah. Oh my God. Speaking of, well, listening to things, Cowboy Carter.
That's what we haven't talked about. You're right. We have not talked about Cowboy Carter.
Did you know that Renaissance was supposed to come after Cowboy Carter? But
I did not. But
during COVID, so she had already written Cowboy Carter. It was supposed to be Act One. But because COVID happened, she said the world needs to dance right now. So she released Renaissance first.
Wow. That's crazy. That's crazy. I also can't imagine, obviously, because I'm not Beyonce, but I can't imagine being like, no, the world needs to dance right now. And then being like, album.
Yeah. Album. Let me put on hold the album I had already written and was ready to record.
Yeah.
So the world can dance. Like,
insane.
I can't wait. I cannot wait for, like, the music videos that are about to come out for this album. Oh my god,
yeah. I really, really love how many people she brought in on this album.
Me too.
I mean, obviously Dolly.
Yeah.
Anyone who knows me. Willie Nelson. Miley. Oh.
I know. God, and that song.
Oh my god, and Blackbird?
Yeah, beautiful.
Oh, the, like, harmonies are insane.
Yeah. Insane. I mean, Daughter. I don't know, understand why nobody else is talking about Daughter the way that I am, but
Daughter's so good.
I saw this great TikTok that was like, just announced, Beyonce will be doing Act 3, and it will be the 24 soprano arias.
Yeah. Caro mio ben. When she started singing that, it sent me to the fucking moon.
Yeah, I know. I was like, excuse me?
Insane.
So beautiful. That song, like, mate, that was the first song that I hit. I have to, like, listen to that one again.
Yeah.
That was the first one that I did that with.
It is such a good album. If
I can't stop listening.
If I had to critique it at all, one, I probably wouldn't. But two, I was expecting, I think, a little more of, like, an outlaw country sound.
Sure.
Like old school Willie Nelson vibes. And I think it's probably because I saw he was on the album.
Well, having like Dolly and Miley. Willie and Post Malone.
Oh, yeah. Like, it... I was just expecting that a little bit more, I think. But the album, I agree, is so good.
I also think that Beyonce just, like... You can't even, like, categorize... People are like, oh, it's not even country. I'm like, you can't categorize Beyonce...
She's
into a category.
She is her own lane.
Yeah. Yeah. She's her own lane.
Yeah.
It's just like, no, this isn't even pop. This isn't even country. This is just a Beyonce album. Like,
yeah. And
you
it's
know?
Like, we have to, I am not willing to accept criticism on whether or not it's a country album from people whose only knowledge of country music is fucking Florida Georgia Line. I'm not sorry. I'm very excited about it, and I love listening to it. It's so well. I mean, you can tell she spent like $100 million on it. It's such a beautiful sounding album.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
She spent $100 million on it?
I think so. She spent a lot. I mean, I'm sure she spent $100 million.
Well, I mean, you also think about the guests that she pulled in. That probably was a huge chunk.
Yeah. I mean, Dolly doesn't fucking play with her royalties.
Smart.
Yeah, she's a smart businesswoman. I mean, Elvis was supposed to record. Have you ever heard this story?
No.
Elvis was supposed to record I Will Always Love You. Because he loved that song. He loved it. And he was supposed to record it. And they were all set up. And then the day before, his manager, Tom Hanks, called her up. And he said, yeah, so Elvis actually doesn't record anything that he doesn't have at least 50% royalties of. And she was like, you are fucking with the wrong bitch.
Yeah, no.
No, thank you. I'm sad to see you go, but I'll be okay.
And then Whitney Houston. Yeah.
Incredible.
I would have loved to hear his recording of it. Maybe there's like a
demo kind of thing. Yeah.
Because he has a lot of demos.
Yeah, that he recorded so much music. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if there was like somewhere rattling around.
Yeah, my papa and I talk about that. There's the like Elvis channel on SiriusXM. Mm-hmm. They play it all the time for my mama.
Yeah,
and it's just always in the background. And he was like, "We listen to this all the time, and for years we've been listening to it, and I still hear songs I've never heard before."
That's
like
crazy.
Maybe not like original songs, but covers of songs that he did, and that he's like, I had no idea that he did that. It's just he has so much catalog.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
Oof.
Well, anyway.
Anyway, that's Be More Chill and Beyonce
and Elvis
and Elvis.
You say move a mountain, and I dun 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 dun.
Next episode is gonna be
The Prom,
which I'm very excited about. A real lesbian telling us about the prom.
How about it?
How about that? How about them apples?
How about them tatas?
How about them tits?
And, tomorrow we're celebrating Kat's Bachelorette.
I'm very excited.
Yeah.
Asking me. People are like, what are you doing? And I'm like, I don't know.
They're like, what do you mean you don't know?
I mean, I don't know. And that's what I want.
Good.
I want to not know. It's very difficult to surprise me because I ask too many questions.
Been good about not asking about this.
It's a lot of like self-control.
It's been a lot of self-control for me to not tempt you to ask questions, too.
Oh, yeah, because if you were like, you want a little, I would be like, yes, tell me everything. But I do genuinely want to be surprised, and I'm very excited.
I know,
the
surprise is going to be too good. All right, well.
All right,
anyway,
well,
I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow, listeners. We'll see you in like a week or whatever. I don't know. Whenever you're listening to this, we'll see you soon.
All right. Peace out, Girl Scout. Okay, bye.
Thank you so much for listening to This Podcast Won't Run a Week. If you'd like to support us, be sure to rate, review, follow, like, and subscribe wherever you listen. If you're interested in additional very cool content, you can head over to patreon.com/thispodcastwontrunaweek. You can check out all of our social media information as well as performance links in the description of this episode. Thanks for listening. We love you lots. Goodbye.